calling all cars. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today, as usual, is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of our Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Right here in the good old studio library back porch, watching the weather and hoping to see an aurora tomorrow.
Oh, that would be good. Well, I guess we've also, since we're taping this show, since this is Thursday's program, we're taping it Wednesday night. We also know in media that you may or may not be hearing us tomorrow, depending on what a solar flare eruption off the sun that's headed straight for our planet might do to electronic communications, GPSs, airlines, and other electronic equipment. I don't think it's necessarily, Chuck, like an EMP that would come from an atomic bomb blast, but this one may just even still be even just a glancing blow, but there are some predictions that we're supposed to have some communication failures.
Well, Barry, you'll be happy to hear that I've consulted a common friend of ours, Tate Antrim.
Uh-huh.
He tells me this is an X-class flare. Now, that may not mean anything to everybody out there, but an X-class flare is a great big one, and it's pointed right at us.
Okay.
X-class flares pointed at us tend to do very bad things to things like power transmission lines and
cell phones and other things.
Yeah. Cell phones and transmitter and receiver antennas and all kinds of things. So
I think for tomorrow I might leave my cell phone sitting on a desk somewhere so it's not on my person.
Well, and that's not a bad plan, since sometimes big solar flares can make electronic devices burst into flames. So, as that happened in the 1850s, but that's not really our topic for today.
Well, no, but it does lend itself to our topic today, Charles, because we are going to be talking about cell phones. Many people in our listening audience have them. Many of us use them for our businesses, but some of us just use them to keep in contact or to make sure we can keep in contact with maybe our teenage children who are out in a vehicle for the first time or away from home doing things, or for loved ones and family, and we want to keep tabs on them. Well, we're not the only ones who want to keep tabs on people through their cell phones, Chuck. Because just this week, there was a ruling that came down from the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Now, the 7th Circuit is based out of Texas and covers a number of the southwestern states. But the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals just issued a ruling that basically says that your cell phone, if a cop decides that they want to search it, they can do so without a warrant. Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. Warrantless searches have been authorized by the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals on your cell phone. Now, honestly, Chuck, I know that I keep a lot of information in my cell phone, names and phone numbers and notes about things that you're doing and recordings, and people download music and video files and everything else to their cell phones. They've almost become like a portion of our personal lifestyle, like a diary almost. You can tell a lot about a person by looking at their cell phone and seeing what they've got and who they call and how long they talk to them and when and what times of the day or night and their social media and everything else. But you see, now police have decided that's information they'd like to get a hold of, and they don't want to waste time on doing something like constitutionally waiting on a warrant from a judge because they have probable cause to search for specific information. They just want to go, well, bargain shopping, I guess is the best way to put it, on your cell phone. And the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals have said that's okay.
Yeah, Barry, I'm going to be quite honest with you. This is a strange case because the man whose phone was searched was under arrest.
Yes, he was.
Now, normally, for instance, if your cell phone is on you at the time of arrest, just about anything that's on you at the time of an arrest is subject to search. So I'm not sure that this is actually saying that the feds or the local police departments can just wantonly look at your cell phone without a warrant. It seems to me that now this may be a change from normal policy in that once you're arrested and you have something like that it would require a warrant to look further into your records. But this, again, this is a strange case. And the reason given by the judge, frankly, doesn't fly as far as I'm concerned if this is a policy change. It's a matter of urgency. Well, aren't all search warrants basically sort of a matter of urgency?
That's right.
So this really doesn't, without having read the entire decision or the pertinent parts, I'm adding two and two and not getting the right numbers.
Yeah, well, I understand what you're saying. What we've got here is the judge in the appeals case, and this is a case that came out of Indiana, and you're right, they arrested a gentleman who was dealing drugs. And the officers just basically decided he'd go flipping through his phone. But the judge in the case said, well, you know what? The officer had to search that phone immediately or risk losing valuable evidence. Now, I guess the thing I kind of laugh about is that courts think that some of these criminals are pretty slick. They must be pretty well technologically versed, and some of them probably are, because he was saying that it was the matter of urgency because it was possible for an accomplice to wipe the phone clean using a computer or remote device. Now, I'll tell you, Chuck, that takes some thinking, I think, for that possibility to even be remotely available. But, you know, what we're getting down to is, you're right, when they arrest someone, they can search his person and things, but they're looking for specific things. And in this case, I think they were looking for names and phone numbers of his accomplices.
Sure, yeah.
And I'm sure drug dealing. Well, if you know that you're looking for specific information, what's the problem with just making a phone call by the court and getting a judge to issue you or go through the electronic device? This precedent is a little disconcerting because it's following on the heels of some other ones that have gone all the way up to the United States Supreme Court, where they've decided that the Fourth Amendment of the United States Constitution doesn't necessarily have to apply anymore.
And by the way, I just want to do a minor correction, if that's okay.
Sure.
The Seventh Circuit is Indiana, Illinois, and Wisconsin.
Oh, I take that back. I apologize. I thought I saw the Northern District of Texas, but what they were doing is this was the newspaper in Dallas-Fort Worth interviewing some former FBI agents and the judge from, or U.S. attorney from the Northern District of Texas. You're right. Seventh Circuit is up in that upper Midwest area.
No big deal. I was kind of suspicious when I saw this was an Indiana case being looked at in a Texas court. I don't think so.
Yeah, well, you know, you can just tell that I'm a little bit jet lagged. So having flown this morning and in a different time zone today, coming to you via the wonders of Skype late at night. So.
Well, in any case, the real question here is, you know, normally, Barry, for instance, if you get arrested, I mean, and they want to look at remotely held property. Like, for instance, someone wants to get into a safe deposit box.
Yeah, or a storage unit, yes.
Yes, they do have to get an additional search warrant. Now, the big fear here is that word would get out that this person had been arrested and someone would remotely get in and erase all the information via computer terminal, would get in and erase all the information on the phone. So they quickly basically they want to look at the phone before it gets erased. Now, I have a problem with this from this standpoint. The standard seems to be that most of the information in the cell phone is not necessarily stored on the cell phone. It's stored in a record that the phone company holds.
That's true. But we know that phone companies have started, in many instances, handing over large amounts of records to police just by the police coming and saying, hey, we want to see these records.
Right. Which is in and of itself is an absolute violation of the Fourth Amendment.
That's right. But again, we're getting into a zone here of rulings from the courts that maybe don't make it a violation of the Fourth Amendment if the Fourth Amendment doesn't apply anymore, because the police have expressed an urgency, as this judge in the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, Judge Richard Posner, stated for the reason why he agreed with the prosecution's case and said, yeah, it's fine for them to go and search through this without the need for a warrant. Now, obviously, they arrested a drug dealer, Chuck, so they've obviously arrested him because of either having him in possession of drugs or having information or have actually set up a deal where he actually was selling drugs to someone. So the cell phone information would have been ancillary to the actual proximate cause of his arrest.
Yeah. What I'm really worried about here is the fact that the courts are beginning more and more and more and more, because evidence might disappear, to say that the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, all these things, they don't really mean that anymore because we live in a different age. Well, Barry, let me tell you, we don't live in a different age. The problem during the colonial period was the same as now. There was always a possibility of evidence disappearing.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
And the idea that we can dismantle the protections of the average person because of a few criminals is really kind of frightening because, you know, some criminals might get away with something and they might not reveal their sources and those kinds of things. And therefore, everybody's rights are up for grabs because of these very limited number of abusers. Well, you know, we've talked about logical fallacies. Again, this is the part-to-whole fallacy. Some people might abuse it, and therefore everybody should lose their rights. I'm afraid I don't see it that way.
Well, you know, that's part of the reason why we do the program, is to help people see what some of these fallacies are and why, when you start exercising the logical fallacy in the realm of law and the realm of judicial policy, you end up with a situation where we could lose, we as a people could lose our liberty and end up being in, well, I guess for lack of a better term, a police state with just a handful of rulers. You know, today the Fourth Amendment doesn't apply in this instance. Well, tomorrow, if a cop decides that they want to pull you over because they assumed you were speeding without any actual physical evidence, then they can go ahead. And the next day, well, you know, if they thought you seemed like you might be thinking about a crime, and so therefore they could bust into your home and search and go through your private possessions in order to see if they could put some pieces together to where you might be a criminal. Honestly, Chuck, it's getting into the realm of Minority Report, the Tom Cruise movie where,
right.
You know, they know you're a pre-criminal, and so therefore they have got carte blanche to come in and do whatever they feel like.
That's right. They know. Well, okay, let's talk for a minute about profiling. That's exactly what a profile is. It's an attempt to use behavioral science, which, by the way, is not a hard science, no matter what they tell you. It's an attempt to draw a profile of someone who's likely to commit a crime.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is it really truly a science? No, and I'll tell you why. If you'll recall the D.C. shooter, do you remember the D.C. shooter, Barry? Oh, it must be about, five, 6 years back.
Yeah, John Muhammad, yes.
John Lee Muhammad, and I can't remember the other fellow's name, the younger guy. But if you recall the FBI's profile, do you remember what it was?
No, not offhand.
Middle-aged white man. The vehicle would be a white van. He would be a member of a white supremacist group or some kind of a fanatical group. They had a whole litany. They had it down to what kind of clothes he would probably be wearing and the whole thing. Well, John Lee Muhammad and his companion were, he was an ex-military black man who had converted to Islam. And in fact, the vehicle they were driving around in was an old beat up, if I remember right, was an old, like, beat up Oldsmobile. And they were actually, someone would lay in the trunk and fire from the trunk of the car.
Right, that's correct.
And it was like an old yellow Oldsmobile or something. Well, the fact is, they got nothing right. The profile was 100% wrong. And yet, these guys are telling us that they can sit around and come up with these profiles and predict crime on the basis of these goofy profiles. Yeah, not so much. And therefore, we should lose our rights because of a profile? I don't think so, Barry.
But again, and that's the thing that we have to be concerned about with what the courts are doing right now. And obviously, you know, it's a situation where this case had to go through probably a trial court. That's the reason why we would suggest that folks would call us and get information about the fully informed jury classes that, you know, we're going to get ready to do some here probably over the summer. We've had a lot of interest in it. And we're going to do that. Our folks at IOTC have finally put together a host kit on doing a fully formed juror class. And so I've got that kit. And I think we're going to start doing those a little bit later this summer because we need more people who are willing to sit on juries and who are going to judge not only the facts of the case, but the law behind it to make sure that we're staying within our constitutional boundaries.
Despite the fact they tell you it's not allowed. Well, that being said, I have to tell you that we are out of time. So please join us tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.